No, we're not doing that. Can't live on. I have an 11-year-old home.
Can I say hello?
You can say hello.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah. Fortunately, everyone in this room likes kids.
Hello.
Skedaddle.
Is this your sign? No, not everybody. I hate this.
Oh, you don't like kids.
No,
Interesting.
I hate them.
Okay, thanks. We're not discussing bullying and suspension today, are we? What we are rather discussing is, well, what we're rather discussing is
Oh,
we
yes.
Jan brought the suggestion of discussing AI. So I think we will do some exploring of that. And we did say that we were going to discuss what does an academic look like, but Anna Martin's not here, and it was her topic. So I reckon we'll wait until she gets here to bring that up because she was like seething when we started discussing what does an academic look like. James, I have an instinct that you might have some opinions on the subject also.
I might have some opinions. I'm not sure how valuable they'd be, but
Well, we appreciate the humility. So we're going to get stuck in with this idea of AI and just start with a really gentle question, which is how have you and how have you used AI since its launch last year? Jan, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I definitely use a lot AI now in my teaching. Oh, by the way, just to give you a little bit of context, what I teach, I mainly teach English literature to primary and secondary school students. And since like we read books like 1984, Animal Farm, George Orwell is my favorite author, and also some American literature as well. So sometimes I would use ChatGPT to, for example, summarize some of the chapters and also to think about the discussion questions in our class, because my literature class is not like a lecture, but mainly discussion based. So what kind of questions we should discuss about the chapters of the book are very essential to my class. So I use sometimes ChatGPT to come up with some discussion questions for the lesson plan, for example. And also for the quizzes, I would also ask ChatGPT to come up with some multiple choice questions in order to engage and assess my students in the class. So that's, I
How many
think.
students do you have? Sorry, how many students do you have?
Right now, my classes, so like one-to-one and group classes. And a group class would be maximum 4 students. And then in total, right now, I probably have around 10 or 12, yeah, including both the group and in one-to-one classes. Yeah. So
So,
yeah, that's what I mainly use AI for.
in terms of generating content, so questions and quizzes,
Right.
I am assuming that there's also an editing process. So you put in a prompt, it generates some content, and then you go through it and
Yeah, I would definitely choose select some of the most relevant question, for example, for the quiz. I think overall the quality is actually very good, but it again it depends how accurate your prompt is. Every time, yeah, it will improve the quality.
so
So
that's the
definitely
next
there's.
question. The skill of creating effective prompt. My 16-year-old and his dog have just walked into the house dripping wet. So in terms of generating prompts, no. Huh. Yeah, and tell me about writing prompts.
Yeah, so for example, can you give me some discussion questions for chapter 2, Animal Farm? So this kind of prompt, and then
Okay.
it will give me some discussion questions, and then I would further ask you, can you relate more to the student's life with these questions?
Nice. Okay. So do you tell the AI how old the students are?
If I feel like the questions are too like how to say they don't fit to my students' age group, then I will add that into the prompt. But in
Okay.
general, right, at first, I don't tell the AI how old my students are unless the questions are not very suitable for my students' age.
Because you just want to see what it's going to come up with.
Right. Yeah.
It's really interesting. So you're keeping your mind open by giving it a broader prompt. So
Exactly.
that's really interesting. Thank you. Thank you. Emma, can we call on you next?
Yeah.
Have you had a play with AI yet?
I have, but more for the business side of things.
Okay.
So, trying to use it to help me write blogs, helping me write the text to go with me social media posts, that sort of thing. I end up editing it a lot, so I'm not sure how much time it's saving me. It's
exactly,
more me just
I have the same feeling. Like for the blog content generation, I do feel like AI doesn't do a very good job. But in terms of the teaching material, I think it does a quite fairly good job.
Okay, so here's a suggestion then, because I'm finding the same thing. In terms of content creation, I find it really bland. I far prefer my voice to ChatGPT's, and I would rather take the time. Also, I would rather do the thinking that writing, that creating the content takes me through. So it's harder and longer, but I don't really want to skip that stage. But what occurs to me is, when you're creating prompts for a lesson, there's still work that's going to happen in the lesson, and you're still going to be adapting it and bringing it to life, and it's only a jumping off point then. So nobody actually sees those prompt questions, whereas in the example of content creation, that's an outcome, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I've used it in the same way for the blog though. Okay. So I have used it to see if it gives me any ideas that I hadn't already had, and used it almost as prompts to then write the blog.
Yeah.
That's been quite helpful.
Yeah.
And it can also like highlight articles for you as well, so it can lead you to other research and things like that, which is quite helpful.
And do you find it's accurate in those cases? I've heard lots of it makes stuff up accusations.
I then go and find the source and check. I wouldn't just
You're
believe it. I am a nerd.
You
know
are
that,
a nerd.
yeah, I wouldn't just believe it, but it almost gives me places to look that I maybe wouldn't have found otherwise.
Interesting.
So that's quite helpful.
Yeah.
But it's definitely prompts. In terms of lesson content, I teach maths, so my content comes from my head.
Uh-huh. Sorry, can you just challenge yourself there, please?
The AI doesn't generate the questions that I would give students.
Sure,
I don't know if it does or not. I've not tried, but assume it doesn't.
If
I
you
know...
wanted to generate number bond questions, 50 number bond questions.
It might do. But then it's not personalized to the student. So the activity I did with my Key Stage 3 class the other day, we did solving equations.
Okay.
And I had hundreds of little pieces of paper that were blank at the beginning of the lesson. And they had three answers on the table. And I was writing specific questions for each student to develop their understanding at the rate they needed. AI is never going to do that for me.
Were you writing the second question based on their response?
Based on where they got stuck or where they could do it, I then designed the next question for them.
Very nice.
So I'd got one person that was answering one-step equations. I'd got one person that was answering two-step equations that were just multiplication and addition and subtraction. And then I'd got another one who I was involving brackets, fractions. So they were literally getting what they needed. If they got it wrong, they got more of the same.
Definitely not paid by AI, but I am going to challenge you. Had you said to AI, give me questions, give me two-step questions, including brackets.
But then is AI going to know that the bit they got stuck on was dividing by 8 and put 8 in every time?
And what if you put that in the prompt?
But then how much time is that wasting in the session?
Oh, definitely. No, definitely. Presumably
so it's
you
more...
have to have... Yeah, but you could have a bank of questions categorized.
I could.
Based on the different misconceptions and prerequisites.
I could, but it would waste my time when I can do that instantly. Like, as
really
in...
interesting.
Instant.
Yeah.
I can literally look at what they're doing and write the next question so specifically for them.
Yeah.
So I know they struggle with their six times table. So I make sure every other question's got the six times table in it. I make sure that I'm watching where they're getting stuck.
I would love to suggest that the students get a kick out of seeing you do that for them as well. That there's
Oh, they loved
that
it.
Right?
They
She's
loved
making
it.
a question just for me because she's watching that closely.
And when they're like, oh, I'm stuck on this one, where do I? And then I use my coaching skills and I'm like, but how did you do the last one? What did you do? How does that, why have I written it like that? How does that link to the one you just did? And that's the personal bit that AI will, I don't think, will ever be able to do in the same way.
I
But
think
I
also
don't think it
you're
will.
driving
Means you're also
here.
engaged. You're engaged with the students, whereas if you had to go back to the AI every time, you would be kind of cutting off from the student. But the way you're doing it is you are properly engaged. That And
sounds
there wasn't
right.
a computer in sight. I was handwriting them and then giving them a piece of paper, and they're stood.
Much
They
better.
weren't sat, they were stood with their
Amazing.
mini whiteboards working it out, and they're moving around, and then they're like, oh, the answer's over there. And they had to move, and they had to. AI can't do that
And
yet.
it doesn't
Maybe,
need
maybe it
to. It
can.
doesn't need to. You know, Jan brought the question of how we're using AI because that's what we're exploring, and exploring its edges is awesome too. But for me, like the fact that you had 100 snips of paper is
I
just
mean,
so
how old school
culturally
is that?
old school.
Like, it's
Exactly what
literally,
LLM. It's not old school.
But it works. And I
And
have
I would
three
say
kids that
it
I've
works even
disengaged.
more because we're so used to a digitized life, analog becomes even more interesting.
And it's just finding ways of, and I don't know whether AI will eventually give us those ideas. Is that
Okay.
something that AI could do eventually? In terms of helping teachers become and tutors become
Yeah, I mean, look, it's quite
more
interesting because
interactive.
there's definitely the teacher training side of it. You know, you wonder whether, you know, when you work with a really good textbook, it also teaches you to teach better, right? I mean, if you look at Adam Box's material in science, that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to teach the teachers to ask questions effectively, which is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I would suggest that, you know, Kamal and I were talking about MathSpot this week. I think that was just before you arrived, Emma, but MathSpot's interesting because it's digitized manipulatives, right? Which is sort of ironic because the whole point is that you can pick them up and move them. But actually, conceptually, they really do help you to visualize. So there is still a lot to it. James, I'd love to hear your thoughts and your experiences of AI so far.
Thank you, Julia. Well, yeah, a little bit equivocal, really. I mean, I've spent a lot of time playing with AI, and I've tried to embrace it very positively because I find it utterly fascinating. But I sense there's a massive disparity between things which are incredibly useful and things which, at the moment, for me, are not useful. So if I just give you two examples, incredibly useful is translating. I've got an assignment next week. I'm going to work with colleagues in Vilnius in Lithuania, and I've been translating quite a lot of Lithuanian, which is not one of my languages, into English, and putting it through different AIs is just fabulous. I mean, the translation is incredible. So that sort of thing is
Is it
extraordinary.
James? Is it Hitchhiker's Guide that where they put the fish in the ear to translate?
I don't know.
You don't, you guys don't know that? Okay, because I think that fish is maybe what AI is doing, but I'm with you.
But you know, that's been a fascinating feature of the different AIs from early on over the past 12 months or so. I mean, when I was writing to embassies in Oslo to invite them to the opening of my school, which then didn't open. I thought when we got to the French ambassador, whom I'd actually met a few days before, I thought that it would be nice to write to her in French rather than English, because French, you know, touchy on those sort of subjects. So I put the letter into ChatGPT and read it. And my French isn't brilliant, but it was good enough to see that it was an incredible translation. Now then
It
I
was
popped
very
it over to
good, you're
it was
saying.
incredible. And then I popped it over to my dad, who was a French teacher in his time. And he said, I can't see anything wrong with it. So that's on the one side. On the other side, I wrote a textbook, a whole textbook for an English literature GCSE set text in the summer, and I made my it's a test set text that I know really well, but I made myself do it, surrounded by a whole bunch of people on the sort of LinkedIn circuit who are AI evangelists saying, James, this stuff's amazing and you're going to be useless, you know, because AI is going to be much better than you. So anyway, I thought, okay, let's embrace the future and let's write a textbook using a composite of different AI applications and so on. So Claude and Pi and ChatGPT and others. Anyway, and I put it all together. Hours and hours of work. It was terrible. There were words, I mean, it hallucinated like a, you know, proper old sort of crack addict. Every other thing was a hallucination. So I had a very simple format. For each chapter, I put the text, so non-copyright literature text, into the opposite AIs, plural. And I got some there that would read, and I said, just, you know, very, very precise prompting about who the kids were, who'd be using this guide, what the purposes of it was, whatever. So I found the level of comprehension of the AI to generate really good questions was not really up to it. And then the second section was a glossary, difficult words. So it's a 19th century text, difficult words and phrases, explaining them. Again, scattergun. I would say about 20 and 30% of the words that they were that the AI was explaining were not in the chapter, they're just hallucination. So anyway, I did it and packed it all up and checked it and things. I'm now redoing it. I'm completely on my own, which is writing my study guide as a free open access website. If any of you English lit teachers are doing Great Expectations with your students,
oh, fantastic.
Stay on the call. Because I can give you a link. I've got about seven chapters out, but we've got video. On location video content, questions, glossaries, facsimile of the Dickens text, and it's expanding. So I'm really excited about, I think, my experience with AI is at the top end of GCSE into Key Stage 5 with A level or IB diploma. It's of limited use for what I want it for. I think things like lesson plans, if you're in a hurry, you had Ofsted in the next day, you had six lessons, you could bung some stuff in and get those formulate lesson plans. But I agree with the other comments that we've heard that at the moment, I think at the higher levels of teaching and tutoring, I'm struggling to find things that are helping me. It's lots fascinating to get involved with. And a lot of my colleagues seem to be sitting around turning themselves into experts on these things, playing with this stuff, which is great. But how's that impacting the lives of kids in the classroom? I'm a bit of an agnostic, to be honest.
Yeah. Did you see Carl Morris from the online schools post this week? To my mind, he nailed it. That he used a gif of an adult walking down the, you know, high school corridor trying to look cool, and his message was, maybe we're completely missing the point, because actually kids haven't asked us about AI, parents haven't asked us about AI, and we're challenging ourselves to keep up with the times because it feels like a point of pride for us not to get left behind. And yet, what is it doing for outcomes for learners? It's interesting. Jenna, what are your thoughts? We're talking about AI. What are your experiences so far?
I have lots of thoughts on AI. Probably expecting that. I am someone who has been involved in lots of different aspects of the tech world for a long time. And so my biggest issue with AI is people don't understand how it works and therefore put all of these things onto it that isn't. And I find that really hard. Like with ChatGPT, this misconception that it can tell you whether it's generated something or not. And therefore people being expelled from universities and all sorts of courses because of things like that. It's like these fundamental misunderstandings of it. And I think that's
let's just clarify. So you're talking about the accusation of for a student of having used AI to write an essay for them. And that's a real sticking point right now, isn't it? It's really one of the hottest areas of AI's doing.
And I think that's just an illustration of just like a general misunderstanding of it. I mean, it's a new technology, and I think there's a lot of work to make it so that people understand how it works in order to be able to utilize it, because I think that it's amazing. As someone with really severe neurodiversities, I have ADHD, I have autism, and I have really quite severe dyslexia, it's really, really invaluable to not being stuck in analysis paralysis, in kind of that overwhelm zone.
So you would use it to get you started, to create the first draft of something? Is that what you mean there?
I don't tend to use it for writing. Okay. Purely because I am really, really fussy with writing. Okay. But what I use it for is breaking things down. So there's one of my favorite, I'm also someone who's really big on FOSS, and for anyone who doesn't know, free and open source software. My partner is a specialist in open source software and things like that, and I'm quite involved on that side of things. And part of my work politically at the moment in the UK is around software and education and stuff. So a little bit of a disclaimer there, that I have biases there. But I do use things to break stuff down. So there's this amazing tool called Goblin Tools. If anyone hasn't heard of it, I highly recommend it. And you just, this particular one is really great, and I advocate for it a lot. You have to do tweaking with it. It's a task breakdown thing. So you put in your task and you can tailor it and things like that. You can break it into as many little steps as you need
to. It supports executive functioning.
Yes, actually, yes.
Okay. So you're saying that if you tell it you need to get an essay written in 10 days' time, it will tell you how to do the research, how to structure the essay, how long to give to the writing of the essay, how long to give to the editing, so that you can get it submitted in time. Is that what you mean?
It doesn't always do necessarily durations, and I don't tend to use it for duration, so I don't know how it works on that side of things, how good it is for that. But it will do, like, if it's, for example, the one I did yesterday was, I really need to clean my house. How do I go about cleaning my entire house? Gave me like,
are you not seconds. Reading Good Housekeeping for that?
I go down rabbit holes if I go down.
Okay.
I recently found House and Country as well, or whatever.
I can just see you with a toothbrush and bicarbonate of soda in a corner of the bathroom.
That is exactly what it ends up being. And I can spend hours cleaning my, why is it always the bathroom? But anyway, it was really helpful in creating this. And then I could tell it, okay, I don't know how to do this bit. Can you break it down even further? And it's not a case of you have to put in exactly the right prompt. You can play it. It's really easy to play around with. Wow. And you just click a button to say break this down more, or
so
delete
I tell you
it.
What I tell you what occurs to me, the metacognition behind knowing which bit you don't understand. Is an immense skill. So if we're talking about prompts in AI, and you're saying we have to understand it, we have to understand its limitations. Maybe what we're saying is that there are disciplines that we need to develop and our students need to develop in terms of metacognition, to understand what questions to ask, to understand what we don't know. Is that something?
I was on a training for this morning, interestingly.
You were? Yeah.
I was on a training for understanding, like teaching young people and students to figure out what they don't know. And in terms of tutoring and how that impacts us as tutors, and our role in that, because that is often, by the time you get to GCSEs, the process of GCSE exams at school, often part of that process is that we don't otherwise know that, and it's not necessarily taught specifically, like revision skills, it has to be part of revision skills, right? And all of that, and yeah, I think that as much as, I think you've hit on something there quite, yeah, it's not just about understanding the principles of it, it's how do you know what to ask it? It's something I struggle with, right? And I can it's something I spent a lot of time on, but even like I don't, it takes so much playing around with, and I'm really good at like Google searches, Boolean searches, and that's not a natural thing for most people, and it's such a thing to learn. Yeah,
that's really interesting. And sometimes it's with purpose and sometimes it's research, and then also, you know, we were talking last week in depth about curiosity and about that discipline of just creating space for curiosity. Kamal, did you want to contribute at all on the
My students, some of them, you know, quite a few of them, they're less into the abilities, and you know, they have a lot of challenges. But you know, I've got some good ideas. Really, I could use it for, say, for English, but also I've got MathBot that is also helping me with which Julia suggested. So that has, it gives a lot of things to that are useful. I have used it for writing articles for students and things like that. I mean, it's helpful when I don't know something, or if I have some information, it's good at organizing. I have some notes, say a presentation, and I want to turn that into an article. It's useful. I just feed that in, and it organizes it well. I find that the drawback is that it uses words unnecessarily. They just try and use a lot of fancy words. So I discovered another function which is called humanize, and
Oh,
it makes it a bit better. It's
that's
a
nice.
humanizing function.
It's
Yes,
called
yes.
humanize.
Humanize, yes, a part of
So
it's a function in ChatGPT.
it makes the language less formal.
Less, yes.
That's
It tries to. It's not been that great, but it's slightly. I just put things through that.
well, I'm
Yeah.
actually just noticed that there is an AI companion on Zoom, and I can't resist pressing the button.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna enable that and see what happens.
That by any chance Otter?
It's not Otter AI, no. I
So
work with.
I don't know what my Otter's doing because it disappeared, but then it keeps reappearing. I'm having weird issues with it. But
Okay, well, Emma and I have now enabled AI on this call. I a little bit feel like it might be in the Pullman book. What's the Pullman book where everybody has a little shadow creature that follows them around?
the light, the
Yes.
yes. Amber Spyglass is one of them. Northern
Yes.
Lights. Ah.
Okay. So in the Northern Light series, they've got little creatures that follow them around and sort of hold their souls. So our AI companions might be doing that for us sooner, Emma. Watch out.
Oh, I found the button. Sorry.
Have you
Is it
found the
found
button? Does anybody know what it does? Is that okay,
it? No,
Gemma? I've enabled you. Has
Emma.
it?
Oh, I have
Have
that as
you?
well.
Come on, press the
Send a
button and
request.
see. I've given you permission. There is a
Can
lot of explainer there that none of us have read. Have you noticed?
I? Probably. Can I ask a question?
Come on, Dolly.
Recommendation for AI worked examples, especially either essays, but also mostly maths. Like worked examples where it explains how and why. Where you can just like put a picture in of your problem or upload the problem from PDF, whatever.
James, in all of your research, have you come across that?
I'm sure there is something, but I can't, couldn't, I've not played with anything like that off the top of my head. I don't know. Maybe you can.
I keep ending up going to get. I keep using. I don't know if you know Obsidian, but I use Obsidian. And I end up using a LaTeX
I don't
plugin
know Obsidian.
to
What's
design, isn't
Obsidian?
it?
What's Obsidian?
Oh, Obsidian is really cool, and I think you would love it. And
It's a
I
good
would love
name.
to show you my graph at some point because it's hilarious. So Obsidian is a theoretically it's officially called like Obsidian Notes or something. And the idea with it is it's a really cool way of note taking. It's really good for writing planning. There are so many things you can do with it. It's open source as well, and there are so many plugins and way of tailoring it. And I'm working with some students to develop a course on how to use it to do your schoolwork and
Fantastic.
manage it for you. And it can integrate with so many things. So I have it work with my Google Calendar to help me with task management and stuff like that.
Yes, very
And
cool.
LaTeX is a program.
LaTeX.
LaTeX.
Oh, these
LaTeX? Yeah.
names, these
So
names.
it's a maths program, and you can do all of maths in it. And it will do computerize everything, and it's how a lot of people develop worksheets and things like that.
That's
They'll
LaTeX. Emma, have you seen LaTeX?
Yeah.
And what are your thoughts?
I haven't used it since uni, so that
Oh,
gives you quite a lot.
so it's been around for
It's
at
been
least
around
5 years
a long time.
then. Was that?
It's been around a long time. Yeah, I haven't used it since uni because I don't. Actually, no, that's not true. I used it when I did some content creation, because the software needed LaTeX in order to write the math.
I'm not spelling LaTeX properly. Can you spell it for me, please? Jenna's not opting into this
It
one.
is.
I
It
feel like it's spelled like LaTeX, like the material, but now
is
I'm not sure.
spelled
It is.
LaTeX.
Okay, it's fine.
Tech.
Okay. Oh, the C. It's got a C. C H.
L A T E X.
Oh, it's latex. It's like the material. Okay, goblin, latex, and obsidian. Just saying, AI is cool.
Yeah, it's it just writes the maths. It's just a way of getting the formulas in a format that works.
So when you started off by saying you didn't use it with your snippy paper lesson, would latex have worked for that, for generating those questions?
I didn't realize it had an AI element now.
I don't know if it does, but it integrates with enough things that I haven't found an AI that works, which is why I use a combo of latex and obsidian. Obsidian isn't AI either, to fix it myself and kind of do it myself.
Yeah.
It's just an
editor.
Are we now at a point where we're hacking AI with our own brains?
Well, I'm doing it myself instead of AI because I can't find an AI that works.
I think that's the problem for maths.
Yeah.
AI, none of the AI softwares will let you write mathematical formulas in a way that...
You know somebody's going to pop up on LinkedIn and tell us how wrong we are in a second, don't you?
Probably.
Someone's going to be like... And they're going to tell us what it is, and it's also going to have a cool name. I need to share with you, I've just had an insight as we've been talking. So if you've had a meeting with me recently, you'll know that I have fireflies that follows me around in meetings. And it's amazing because it records and transcripts all the meetings, and it makes me feel so safe, like nothing's going to get lost. It's all there in my Google Drive somewhere, yeah? And I've just called myself out. I'm turning into a content hoarder. You know how year one teachers have like mountains of empty tissue boxes in case they one day need them? That's what I'm doing with content.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how I feel about that.
I feel like it's like the equivalent of like a professor, like that stereotype of professor desk with the stacks. Yeah, I feel the same, except it's in my Google Drive.
Yes. So... And have you, so I did a, you know, those like demo webinar things that, you know, they tend to be American and they're like really hard sell. So I accidentally attended one of those and nearly pressed the purchase button 12 times on the way, except that Hannah stopped me. She was like holding me back. But that was for a course community platform that is run on AI that can take all of your content and rejig it so that it answers questions in your voice. So it's like a chatbot that's, I know! And on the one hand, it's amazing because it will take all of your library of content, and I do make a lot of it, and pull it out and say exactly what Julia Silver would say on X subject, which is bizarre. And also, like, do I then have to put the questions in myself to find out what I think about the... I was very weird.
But don't forget ChatGPT, they will take Julia Silver's content and present it as its own and give it to someone else. So don't forget
they already are.
Okay.
Except they've already got it all, right? It's in Fireflies, it's on Google, it's in Zoom, it's on YouTube. They've got everything I've ever said.
They could do it themselves,
And like, you know, there's also that piece about like legend in your own lunchtime. Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, like, you don't have to take it too seriously. I don't know. James, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. I think we accumulate too much. You know, sometimes there can be things that, mechanisms, applications, whatever, that set out to make our lives easier and more organized that end up imposing an extra layer of organization on you. And I suppose it's knowing when to use stuff and when not to. I mean, I've actually got one of these extraordinary things that you're holding up there, Julia.
I just found this in my cupboard. I've never looked at it before. Look, it's completely blank.
Oh, wow.
But do you feel the pressure to use it? That pressure of it's there, so I've got to use it. Is that what you were trying to get at, James?
Well, I just think there's, you know, there are degrees. It's knowing what you need and what will make your life more efficient and effective as a tutor or a teacher, whatever, isn't it? And going into a system of organization which is maybe too, you know, may have capabilities which you simply don't need. So it's knowing when it will help. And I think there's so much, there's such a proliferation of AI applications and products and things which people are, you know, are pushing hard at the moment. And I suppose it's about you know, making time to dip into some of those things, sharing impressions and thoughts with colleagues, and then finding out what is useful. I mean, just going back to the tutoring piece, I've got had a kid who was I was supporting with an extended essay, so trying to just help him get it written basically, and I typed the question into ChatGPT, just to see what it came up with, just to check from my point of view that there wasn't anything, you know, sort of basic that was missing from the potential essay, because it was a history essay on a period that I know a bit about, but it wasn't my top thing. And that was very, very useful. And actually, also, as I do some journalism, and I was asked, I did a feature article on something. And when I sort of got my ideas together, knew what I wanted to say and think of what I wanted to cover. And then I put that into a few, into Claude, and a couple of other AIs, just to check. And that was really brilliant what it did there to sort of, you know, pull out the threads. And I thought, yeah, I've got that covered. So I wasn't using the anything that AI had written to put into my article, but
It
it
was a
was useful
safety
just to
net.
check I hadn't missed anything, or that, you know.
That's really nice.
So it's, yeah, I just think it's a very, very complex picture.
That's
I
really
don't think there's a
interesting.
doctrinaire, you know, approach is ever going to be useful for helping our students. But they all know that they can do a piece of homework on ChatGPT, I mean, and
I
other.
have a 16-year-old who has been writing CVs and job applications. And of course he's used ChatGPT for it. It would be madness not to. And actually, there seems to be a little bit of a sort of pastoral process where by reading what the email says he is, it sort of points him in the direction of this is what good looks like. You know, you should be hardworking, motivated, and interested in dogs if you're applying to work in a pets at home, right? So I did find that quite informative to let him have that relationship with the tool that was giving him actually some structure and some guidance.
Yeah. And I think, you know, all sorts of practical levels. I mean, if you know, outside our line of business, but if you're running a small business and you're doing mail order or something like that, the capability of AI to do the emails to clients who are writing to complain about something, or, you know, those simple sort of the washing up of your daily comms, it's extraordinary what it can do, I think.
That's really interesting. I do wonder though, you know, let's just take the opposite side of it all for a second. When AI is running the world, right? So Odette posted a Danielle, could you laugh quietly, please?
He's got a penny off the side of my estate building and it cut a policeman right off. And then this tiny guy runs out.
My question is, appropriately, when AI is doing all the things that Upwork's people do for us, virtual assistants and copywriting and editing and all of those things, what's left for us to do?
Julia, that's a good question. But also, you know, we're teaching students in the future, how will AI affect their careers? What will they be doing? We're teaching them math and English and chemistry and things like that. Will there be there'll be a need for them in the future, you know, to be lawyers and doctors? So, no, have you thought about that? How is it going to affect their future apart from ourselves? I mean,
I
we've got
think
short term, but they've got a long future, and so many changes are going to happen in the next 5 years or 10 years.
Jan,
So
go
what's
for it. Yeah,
Kamal, I'm
the
so
future?
glad you mentioned this because that's actually one of the big things I really want to talk with everyone here as well. So, how would AI impact students and their future? I feel like right now we are so intimidated that students are using AI for their homework, and thus they would forbidden the students from using it. But I feel like the problem is how to guide them to use AI for their own benefits, because that's actually what everybody will use in the future. So if you're forbidding the students from doing them, that they're not learning the new skills, how to use the AI effectively for their future. So yeah, the question is how we can guide
Good point.
students.
And there's more than that, because really Kamal's question is, what does it do to the workforce?
Yes,
Which jobs
exactly.
become irrelevant? Go ahead, Emma.
This is a bigger can of worms that I'm about to open. the education system is not fit for purpose now.
Oh, really?
The education,
oh, I hadn't noticed.
But as in, we're not preparing them for the workforce that they currently are. Never mind what the workforce looks like with AI. Like, we're so far behind that worrying about AI, we're not worrying about what the workforce looks like now.
And actually, I think something that came up recently is AI could actually level the playing field for those that are most educationally disadvantaged. Like, it's a whole bunch of what I do is working with those young people who cannot access the education system. And I can't reach all of those young people. Tutors like me can't reach all of those young people. AI can reach more of them.
What does what does reach mean in this context? Because when you say that you reach those children, I have a really clear idea of relationship building and you know, and all of that magic that happens between a safe adult and a child who needs it. And so, I don't see how AI reaches that.
I think that's a really good point. So there are, in my mind, there are two definitions. Your definition, absolutely. And then just providing access. Right. Mm. So for many young people around the world in rural areas around the world, including the UK, that aren't well connected, like where I live, I don't have internet here. I am relying on a series of homemade cell signal boosters because I don't even get...
You're like a little MacGyver there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a great project. It's very frustrating because the weather is bad, so my internet keeps cutting out because I have across our
Probably
farm...
Probably need more chewing gum somewhere.
But, like, if I live in a fairly wealthy area, sure, it's the worst funded county in the country. However, this specific area is fairly wealthy. And if we don't have this access, and if a young person here is cut off, they can't go to school, they can't access online tuition a lot of the time because, you know, a whole host of reasons, they can't have that person. And, you know, around the world, there's different levels of that, right? And one of the big conversations literally in the last couple of weeks around this has been that for areas where they do young people, whether there isn't a school there, so thinking this particular conversation was focused a little bit on rural Africa, where there are areas where there aren't schools, you can't get there, or you have to stay home for whatever reason, because you're a girl, because whatever, right? That often there is more facility to provide access to electricity and some degree of internet. So AI, whether like you, with an AI tutor, you don't have to rely on someone being available. And yes, it is no replacement for that human contact, but it is something. And right now they have nothing. So, and for young people who are so terrified of people. So I'm working with a young person now who never even opens his front door and looks out the window because he is so terrified of people that I have been able to develop a relationship with him where I can go into his house, but in that gap where he couldn't access anything and he couldn't bring himself to access anything, he was comfortable on a computer, he's comfortable with messing around with AI, there is scope there. And
that's,
I think,
interesting. So we're almost saying that there are opportunities. You know, Kamal asked about job opportunities. You're saying that this person who couldn't hold down a job in Sainsbury's can create employment routes because he's not afraid of exploring AI, tech, various tools.
And for people who are disabled, I spent several years being completely housebound, unable to work or anything, because even though I wanted to work and I was going stir crazy not working, there was nothing I could do because people wouldn't accommodate any disabilities, or it was problematic and whatever, and there were loopholes in the law and whatever that allows some degree of that. But like, COVID has opened that door for me to be able to be more able to access work, to access training, and my life has turned around because of that simple thing of more things being online like this. right?
Yeah, it's a really rich seam. It's a really rich seam. We've discussed the overlap between tutoring and disabilities frequently here. And if not disabilities, then underlying health issues or, you know, commitment, you know, caring roles. But there are lots of people in the qualified tutor community who are unable to leave the house, and they still function and are, you know, fulfilled and stimulated and contributing to society as tutors.
Exactly. Like, one of the reasons why the tutoring industry as a whole statistically has some of the highest percentages proportionally of neurodiverse adults, of disabled adults, of all of these things, of families, of parents of young children and stuff, is because there is this flexibility. And the more that we head in this direction of balance, I can balance my workload with a young person who needs more than I have capacity for. I can bridge that gap by giving them access to these things and supporting access to some AI stuff or to various types of digital learning, that they don't need me to spoon feed every little thing when it's not always the right thing. And I think that is something that's taken me a really, really long time to be okay with. But I think it's a really important thing that we can't do everything. You can't be a one-man band all the time. And there are things that can help, and versatility and finding the right thing is by experimentation for everyone, right?
It's the true definition of hybrid learning, surely. That it's everything. You have access to a tutor, you have access to school, you have access to online learning, you have access to AI, you have access to all these resources. So that's what we essentially are as tutors, is just another resource for them. You have access to all of this, and it is a hybrid of everything. You get the best of everything.
Yes,
true hybrid learning.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So now AI just becomes another resource.
Yeah.
And the whole question is how to blend with a focus on what the needs of the student are. I don't know if you saw that I posted this morning. So for me, this is absolutely superb, right? And I have it up on my whiteboard because it gives me courage. But where you said, Jenna, about, you know, and you can make mistakes and you can make corrections just now in terms of tech, I do feel like we are learning this through tech, aren't we? That it's possible to press, you know, undo, and that there are ways to continue to make progress without having to get everything right. And I also think, so we just had a really intense coaching session, my 11-year-old and I, with the amazing Jacqueline McGill, who was talking about sitting with discomfort. And one of the interesting things that Jan's done by bringing the conversation of AI today is holding space for that discomfort. We don't know what AI is going to do. We don't know how it's going to affect jobs in the future. We don't know how we're supposed to be using it today. We don't know whether or not we should bother yet, right? We don't know what place it has in our space, whether it's going to make all the difference or no difference at all. And sitting with that is the best start. That's where curiosity sits. James, what are your thoughts?
No, just to add to that, and I agree, absolutely agree. And I'm really interested to hear the people reflecting on the, you know, the future of being hybrid. And I think for perfectly placed students, AI will be a very important thing in studies. But the we know from wielding our magic as tutors that the human interaction, whether it's online or in person, is something extraordinarily priceless. And I think that will acquire a greater value as, you know, more of education is delivered with AI. I think the price of the tutor and the human, you know, the belief, the rapport that we have with the students, it will be very important. But the thing I'd like to add, I think, is that in terms of education and developing education to equip our young people for the future that is now and that they're going into, I think that AI does raise the bar because life is becoming more complex as a result. We have an absolute superfluity of instantly available information and disinformation and misinformation coming at us from all angles. We then add to that the necessity to know about AI, but also to be able to work with it and to use it, to deploy it to the right sort of advantage. So therefore, the task of educators, I think, becomes incredibly complex. And I would very strongly argue that, you know, our role in shaping the moral compass and the integrity and the self-confidence and the determination of students is something that's going to be increasingly important. And I would say that the humanities come into that very much. It's something I'm posting on LinkedIn quite a bit about. It's the idea of cultural capital. And that's something that kids need alongside their STEM and everything else, the entrepreneurship and technical ability.
Cultural.
It's to have compass points, reference points in the educational journey that really build character. Brilliant. And discernment, I would say, is the one thing we need to try and
critical
cultivate.
Critical thinking, right? In terms of discernment. Cultural capital is a really juicy content subject that I may be brave enough to bring up another day, because there's certainly a lot of biases in cultural capital, aren't there, that would be interesting to explore. I do think, and Jenna's nodding her head off there as well, I think there's some opportunities here, and the sort of the fearlessness that we're showing up with to explain them, to explore them, is I think one of the most important things. I am having a really strong instinct to go organic and turn my house into the good life. Do you know what I mean? Because there's this sort of, and as we sort of explore the complexity that AI is creating, we sort of have this like, you know, strong tug back towards a simpler approach. And I'm definitely feeling that dichotomy in myself. I don't know if you guys are feeling that as well. Jenna, I'm coming to you in just a second. I've lost it. Go ahead, Jenna.
Sorry.
No, I'll find it. Okay.
There is some really, really interesting research into this. I think it goes wider than what I've read, and I haven't read really a lot into this because it was a little bit of an epiphany for me. But from a social science point of view, as well as from a more kind of cognitive / neuroscience point of view, there's research into the impact of technology on society as like the technical sense of society, like group of people and how we structure stuff. And this idea that more and more, and I've seen it as well here, like we're having to encourage parents to use technology with their kids at kind of like, you know, not infancy, but like that early years, to introduce them to technology and things like that, because they're now coming into schools with no experience of any of this, and it's hitting them really hard and struggling to access stuff because we have this natural instinct where it's too much and we're pulling back into kind of what they're like the natural groups. Like society was never meant to be these massive cities, right? That's not what original human nature was. And there's some really interesting research into like these groupings, this idea of community and naturalness and going back to
I would love to explore this with you in the future. I would love, in my mind, we're talking about villages, right? And we're talking about all of the villages being joined up through tech. I want to share with you that thread that I dropped earlier was a book by Mo Gawdat, who used to be chief business officer of Google X. He runs a really worthwhile podcast. And his book, Scary Smart, I have it on audiobook and I'm scared to listen to it. because he talks there about how if we want AI to be a force for good in our world, we need to teach it goodness because it's learning from us. So we actually need to step up our game and be healthy humans if we want to create AI that is going to be not the scary Terminator type, but the force for good that we desperately need. So on that really juicy kathunk of an idea, I'm going to stop us and I'm going to thank you for really engaging in such a rich conversation. And I love that we each have our own perspectives, and knowing each of you and your own niches, the fact that we can come together and have this sort of, you know, frontier level conversation is so gorgeous. Thank you for participating in this conversation. That qualified tutor hosts on a Thursday at 11 o'clock. QT Conversations are an open forum discussion for us to explore what we know, what we don't know, what we like to know more about, and also the humanness and the authenticity that we show up with. So thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you, Jenna. Bye. Thanks, Kumal. Bye.